Episode 76 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded April 7th, 2016. Tragic endings. I think I'm going to leave the laughter in that front part. Because it's like, that's we ridiculous. Use such a heavy title for our episode.
Tragic.
And then I said it and we were all looking at each other. It's just like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. We're talking about shows that ended.
Yeah. Yes. Tragic endings. Yes. Oh, man. But yeah, this week we are going to be discussing the finale of Walking Dead, the season finale, of American Crime Story, the season finale of 11/22/63. I'm assuming that's actually a series finale.
Right. Yeah. I would think there's not going to be 11/22/64.
No. I don't think. He's back from the dead.
He's back.
then you'd be on Walking Dead then.
Yeah, exactly.
That actually make more sense than the way Walking Dead ended.
A little preview for how Greg feels about that finale.
Yeah.
And we're also going to mention Archer. Archer's return for season 7.
Yes.
Tragic ending to the non-viewing of Archer.
Yeah, there you go.
if you'd been really enjoying not watching Archer, that's a tragic ending.
Although there's a thread there that could be a tragic
ending.
That's
true. Yes. That's true.
And Better Call Saul. Once again, we have to always talk about Better Call Saul. Mm. But before we get into all of that, guys.
Exciting news.
This is the TV Dudes.
Yes.
I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Greg.
And yeah, we have some exciting news.
Yes.
Our podcast awards are coming up. They're coming up in a week. So the podcast awards is a thing that we try out for every year. We never really make it. We know we're kind of small potatoes.
But they don't really have a separate TV. It's like media, right?
They've actually... they don't. They... Right. Have changed a lot of categories right. this year, but it's still TV and film. So right. how do you compete with the film category when you're TV?
Yeah, because TV is not better than film.
TV is better than film.
It is better
really?
Than film.
That's only our opinion.
But that's only our opinion.
I don't think so. Ask the people who made Batman versus Superman or whatever. If they don't think film is...
there you go. You know? Greg's got a good counterpoint.
Just saying.
So the podcast awards are going on, and as of the release of this episode, which is on the 8th, there's another little voting going on, a pre-voting. So our friends over at Diamond Club Network, Night Attack, Brian Brushwood's whole...
media empire?
Media empire, that's a good way to term it. Mm-hmm. They did this last year, where they sort of formed this... super PAC, for lack of a better term.
Right.
Where they pool in their resources to pick who they want for each category to kind of support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can actually vote for us over there if you would like. We're probably not going to win, but we would appreciate your support anyway.
And it's like voting for Bernie. We appreciate it. We're probably not going to win, but we appreciate the thought.
The revolution starts here.
So the URL to go over there and vote to support us is YOLO420.com/hat voting.
Yellow.
So that is YOLO.
YOLO.
YOLO. And then 420, the numbers, /HATVOTING, hat voting. Mm-hmm. And you can go there and you can vote just once. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to use your Google account in order to vote. But yeah, you guys could help support us. We are actually in second place for the category.
Yeah,
they're picking, and there's like 8 people on there.
There you go. So
we're
come on,
far behind. Yeah. The first place.
I mean, you don't have to give us an iTunes review this week. No. Patreon.
No.
All we want is for you to go over to this. But if you haven't committed to any support for us,
right.
We understand everybody's busy. You could do this, and then you cannot feel guilty when Grant is guilting you for the rest of the year.
that's exactly. kind of true, I guess. And. The other thing is, I do 2 other shows occasionally that you could totally vote for as well.
Yes.
The Beerists are in the arts category.
Yes.
You can go vote for them. They're actually closing in on the number one contender.
Yep.
And in the games and hobbies category, Rage Select is there.
Yes.
Go vote for them as well. They're also really close to being first place. So, you know, everything I'm on is in second place right now.
Yeah.
And so that'd be a great help. That's a, once again, the TV Dudes, the Beerists, and Rage Slike. Go vote for those.
Yes.
YOLO420.com/hat voting. And So that's the big part of that news. The other part is that the Podcast Awards officially opens for nominations on the 15th, April 15th. So that's next. That's two Fridays from now.
Yep.
You guys, well, as of the release of this, one Friday, next Friday.
Right.
You guys can go there and you guys can nominate us in that category, the TV and film category. And you can do that once a day, I believe. So go Please. There. Really rally the troops and Every nominate day. Us. We Every appreciate day. The help.
Just yeah. put it like on a calendar, like alarm, and then so it'll remind you to do it every day. Like exactly. do it the same time every day. It's like working out or something.
And if you guys follow us on Facebook and Twitter, I will be sure to spam you with a bunch of reminders.
Yes.
So yes, thank you guys for all of the support. Moving on, iTunes.
Yeah.
We got an iTunes shout out.
Yay.
Now, okay. I'm not going to tell you guys how to do it because if you've been listening to the show, you already know how to do it and you already feel guilty that you haven't done it yet. Or you have done it and awesome. Mm-hmm. But this person went to the iTunes store, looked up the TV Dudes, gave us a 5-star rating and wrote a review. Mm-hmm. This is from Comma 1996. The title is True Blue Legends.
Oh.
And I have a feeling I have to read this one in an accent.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to do my best accent here.
All right.
A ripper group of fellas, chin-wagging about the silly pictures on the tube. While others may have a few tickets on them, these fair dinkum blokes are dead set honest, genuine, and will have laughing like a gala. So don't be a sook, call in your sickie, grab a coldie, and give the TV Dudes a crack.
Okay.
Coldly? I butchered some of this terminology.
That was Finnish, right?
Is it Finnish?
Finnish, yeah.
I went for my Finnish accent.
I was assuming it was Australian, but you kind of went between an Australian and English accent.
They're very close.
That was my Russian accent. Oh. So I'm offended. It's the best I can do.
Oh, boy.
I think that was complimentary.
That was complimentary. It was very complimentary. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Coma. Or Coma.
Yeah.
Coma in 1996.
Right.
We appreciate that.
And whatever vernacular that was.
Yeah. And once again, if you guys want to do that, head on over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating review. We appreciate it. Over on Patreon, we don't have any new patrons, but that's a place where you guys can also pitch in, donate whatever you want per episode. And in exchange, we have been doing bonus exclusive content.
Yes.
Political Dudes is what we're calling it.
Yes.
And each week we're talking about the crazy primaries.
Yeah.
A lot of political talk, and it's a lot of fun. So once again, if you guys want to go over there, you can support us at patreon.com/TV Dudes. We want to thank everyone who has been supporting us. We've actually upped our donation quite a bit since we've been doing these. Yeah. I guess some people are liking these political books.
Thank That's you great. Very much.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
It is really cool.
And yeah, we got a much bigger donation this month, and wow, thank you guys. It's very humbling.
Yes.
We really appreciate it. Moving on, we have listener questions. So if you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, you guys can ask us anything. And if it's TV related, we'll answer it.
Yeah. You might want to not spoil shows that were on the night before because some of us don't have cable.
Who are you talking about?
Nobody. Nobody asked any questions that spoiled two things I haven't watched yet.
Yeah.
Well, we'll skip any questions that might have spoilers.
Even I don't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm the spoiler. So.
All right. First question comes from Michael Gastini, who says, "Hey, dudes. One of my favorite things to do when watching an episode of TV is figuring out how that episode title relates to the episode itself." Oh, dude, I love that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Example, IFT, meaning I fucked Ted in Breaking Bad.
Right.
What are some of your favorite episode titles that have a clever connection to the episode? Or what shows have the most creative episode titles?
Well, I mean, Breaking Bad had great ones.
Yeah.
And Better Call Saul continues.
Yeah.
This week's Fifi.
Yeah, which made total sense.
Great total. Great title. People vs. O.J. Simpson.
That was good.
They had Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
Yeah.
And Manna from Heaven. And there was a lot of great titles. iZombie does really good.
Do they?
They do goofy sort of fun. So every week on iZombie, she eats a brain and she gets a different personality, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So she got a stripper brain, and the title was Pour Some Sugar, Comma Zombie. Pour Some Sugar Zombie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, stripper good. Anthem. And it's usually callbacks to various things. So they're pretty clever and pretty funny and goofy and dorky, admittedly, but it fits the tone of the show. What else? Who else does good titles?
One of the ones I always think of the title Friends. They always did the one that.
They really had
funny,
they had titles.
One where, blah, blah, blah.
That was a thing. It was one of the gags.
Well, Kirby Enthusiasm was great because you always tried to figure out where in the arc it worked, or it was either a theme or something Larry would say that just really worked.
Oh, you know what? My favorite one by far, because it's often a punchline, is It's Always Sunny.
Oh, yeah. It's Always Sunny. The way they introduced it is so great.
They use it to such great effect. They'll build up a scene, and then the title will come in, and usually it's like, We Killed Charlie or something like that.
My one of my favorite titles on Always Sunny was Bums Making a Mess of Our City. It didn't tie in. It really wasn't what the show was about, but it's just such a memorable title.
Yeah, I love their titles.
Yeah, their titles are great. Yeah.
Next question. Daniel Wallace says, hello, dudes of the TV. So with Chuck's humble brag on Better Call Saul, how much do you feel Jimmy was justified in his sabotage? So maybe we should hold this question off until we talk about
it. Yeah, we'll hold it for Better Call Saul.
We're going to skip this one, hold it until we get to that discussion.
But we will talk about that.
Yes. Yeah. So let's see. Zach McLernan is okay. So it seems that Walking Dead and the Venture Brothers had a worse season finale of the season.
Ooh! Wow, Venture Brothers?
Yeah, that's. I haven't actually gotten to it. Huh. Thoroughly upsetting fans across the board. What are your thoughts on these, and what do you think contributes to a show having such a poor finish to a season such as these?
I don't know. I can't really speak to Venture Brothers, but Walking Dead. It's you're walking around. You get the
and you're
zombie.
Dead.
You get the zombie apocalypse. You get that there's evil humans going around and trying to work your way through that. You get that, but after a while, when you set up so many fake deaths, or you know that there's certain characters that will never have anything happen to them, it gets to a point where it's like, okay, we got to move on to something else. Or people are starting to make like today's Rick will. I mean, yesterday's Rick will look like today's Rick and kick his ass because all the stupid mistakes he's making now. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's like there's
a lot of inconsistency just to fit the plot narrative.
Right, and that's just terrible. And that, so for that, and I think that happens with shows that get long in the tooth, or I don't know, maybe they're obligated because of contracts to keep certain people. Like I said, I don't know about Venture Brothers, but it just seems like because of behind-the-scenes stuff that had nothing to do with actually a decent story, seems to be guiding like particularly Walking Dead than anything else.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Venture Brothers and Walking Dead are both pretty popular, especially in their milieu. I don't know about Venture Brothers overall, but Venture Brothers is very
beloved.
Venture
Brothers is popular in its niche audience.
Yeah.
Right.
So is it possible that there's a correlation between being popular and doing a bad ending? Like, are you so worried about pissing off your fans that you don't take chances?
Yeah, I think certainly a show where there's a bigger investment to the point where you feel like you have a certain degree of ownership means that you have expectations of how you think a plot should go.
Right.
And in Walking Dead, there's a particular part that was upsetting to the audience, and we will discuss that a little later on.
Right.
But I think overall with these episodes where, you have something like the fans get so upset about what it is that happens. It's that they must, to some degree, want a certain thing, a certain different plot. And it's not think it's their story to tell at a certain point. But also, I think that the creators sort of misjudge their audience.
Yeah.
And they think that dangling a plot thing is going to be cute or the cliffhanger is going to go over well.
Right.
And sometimes that really pisses
me off. I mean, maybe it's misreading of the audience. That's another thing is misreading your audience.
Like Lost love to do cliffhanger endings. I love them.
Yeah.
Not everyone does.
Not everyone did.
Not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah.
Like I saw who's the guy I follow? It was either Feinberg or Sevenwall. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But one of them was complaining in regards to Walking Dead about season two of Lost ending on the cliffhanger of,
I think it was Sevenwall,
of not seeing what's in the hatch.
Yeah.
And to me, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved where it ends right there.
Yeah.
But I can understand that some people need things closed off in a tidier package because seasons mean something to them.
Yeah.
In a different way than it means something to me.
Well, and Sevenwall was also talking about the killing. It was like they pretty much promised they were going to tell who killed her, and then we didn't.
Yeah. That's a great example.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm waffling a little.
I'm with you on this in general, actually, Grant. I think that cliffhangers can be a very effective ending for a show that you know is coming back.
Yeah. It's great water cooler talk.
It's great water cooler talk.
And speculation.
You get to speculate all summer. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next, move on. On Alejandro Reyes Zapata says, I hear Law & Order True Crime is going to be a show similar to American Crime Story. People versus OJ. What stories would you guys like to see adapted for a season-long arc for either show?
Oh.
So is Law & Order doing a true crime? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
It's interesting.
I thought they were going to do a second. Are they doing a second American Crime Story? Like
they are, and it's going to be what we've heard is Katrina-related, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Now, that's really interesting. Now, the obvious one is the Menendez brothers, right? Ooh. Like, that's a story.
Menendez brothers, actually, the... JonBenet
Ramsey.
Ramsey.
Yeah, that was never really resolved.
You want to talk about landmines, man. I mean, OJ had its landmines, but JonBenet Ramsey, there's so many ways to do that in a classless, dangerous way.
It was terrible.
Charles Manson.
Nah.
Oh, Manson family. I'd love to see a Manson family.
Again?
Yeah.
It's been on like so many times.
I mean, but they did
so
like the Aquarius where the point of view was on like David Duchovny's detective.
Yeah.
Like done the same way that they did People versus OJ where everyone gets sort of humanized. That'd be interesting.
That'd be really difficult.
It would be. It would be. Plus, but you could definitely see
plus
it.
Plus, I think it's just, I mean, that's shit that was almost 50 years ago. And I do think that, I definitely think the OJ thing trumps Manson.
Yeah.
Also, because I mean, in a strange way, because Manson didn't commit the murders himself.
Yeah,
he had people around.
Right.
See, I thought that this was going to rotate around courtroom dramas just because of the OJ one.
Right.
But once they announced that Katrina was on the table,
it could be any
then
crime.
You can just look at any sort of American travesty that occurred and really kind of examine.
Well, if
that.
They do that, you could do Oklahoma City bombing.
Oh man, you could do George Zimmerman.
George Zimmerman. You could do the first bombing. What they should do is the first.
Too soon.
The first. Yeah, it's too soon. But the first bombing. Yes.
The first bombing of the World Trade Center.
Yes, that'd be a fascinating story.
Because a lot of people forget about that. It didn't bring them down. It only killed five people.
And you know honestly, what I want to see, especially if Law & Order wants to distinguish itself, is for them to do true crime that's interesting, but that everybody doesn't know about.
Yeah.
Like, I want a story that I don't know about, but that's just got, there's plenty of stories
that's
in the court
system. They're always like ripped from the headlines.
Yeah.
Stories.
But to do one serialized instead of sort of taking one and filing the serial numbers off and making a fictional version of, that'd be a different way to approach it.
Now we need the Making a Murderer episode to be turned into, or that whole series.
Yes.
Just be parodied.
Well, it's come. I mean, they've done it in movies like the Wonderland Murders in L.A., which was a really good movie. But maybe do that, which was like kind of the 80s sleazy or like something from Cocaine Cowboys. If you've ever seen that documentary, which is totally insane. Something from Cocaine Cowboys or like in Chicago, something from that. I don't know. There's a lot.
Yeah.
Too bad. I mean, we live in a country that has a lot of violent crime.
There's plenty of room for more than one true crime show. That's for sure. Yeah.
All right, let's hit one more before we call it a break.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's coming in from Victor P. over on Twitter, a.k.a. Lambda Man VP. What is your favorite series to rewatch? I'm on my 11th running of The Sopranos.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit.
That's easy.
I don't think there's anything I've watched 11 times.
Oh.
Terriers?
No. I've actually only seen Terriers through about 3 or 4 times.
My favorite is Arrested Development. Watch it over and over and over.
My favorite, and it's an extended rewatch, is Cheers.
Yeah?
Because it's a long series. Like, the last time I did it was, like, 3 or 4 years
it's
ago.
Like 20...
But I watched all of it over the course
that's
of, like, three... It was, like,
intense,
three...
Dude.
It was, like, 3 years of the rewatch.
It was, like, over 200 episodes.
It was a 3-year rewatch. Yeah. I watched it for a long... And I watched it in between other stuff.
For me, I watched The Wire every year.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Every year since it ended, and even multiple years, because... Like, say, well, Helena never seen it, so it gave me an excuse to show it to her.
Oh, do I have to watch The Wire again?
Yes, you do.
Shit, okay.
Yes, you do. You have to watch The Wire
I'll
again.
Watch it again.
I would say my answer would be, if I had the time, I would rewatch Justified all the time.
Me too.
Really?
I would definitely rewatch Justified.
There's episodes, like now, just one of the coolest things about this, like, there's episodes of Justified, there's episodes of Game of Thrones I rewatch.
Yeah.
I rewatched all of, not Seinfeld, but Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I mean, see, I would if I had all unlimited time, I would rewatch Game of Thrones every year. Mm-hmm. I would rewatch I just blanked. Friday Night Lights would probably
I rewatched that one.
Yeah.
We really need to
Breaking Bad is the one I'd rewatch.
And mm-hmm. I pull episodes from Breaking Bad every once in a while.
Yeah, I don't do it. I usually have so much to keep up with that I don't rewatch. And I have I'm looking over my bookshelf. Mm-hmm. I have every season of Justified save season one, which I've actually watched,
right,
on Blu-ray. Most of them unopened because I haven't had a chance to rewatch them all.
That, and actually, I used to rewatch Mad Men all the time. I will rewatch. Yeah, all of them.
I'd rewatch Mad Men too if
there
I had
time. There was supposed to be a blog about your. I know. You promised that.
I promised it 5 years ago.
Yeah,
I'll get it done when I'm 60, I think.
And Randy, how many times have you actually watched Real Rock?
Well, you know, the first time you're just kind of watching for content. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The second time you want depth and theme. Mm-hmm. The third time, you want to see the jokes. You want to watch for the jokes.
The fourth time, you clearly hate yourself.
And on the fourth time, you're just watching to see if George Lopez is going to snap and murder Rob Schneider with a hose. And he doesn't. He never does. And that was disappointing every time I watched it.
The fact that you know that George Lopez is in it.
That's just all I know.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's scary.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not a
kind of a big news week this week. There's some interesting stuff popping up. So I'm just going to take it in the order you gave it to me.
Okay.
So the Doctor Who spinoff Class, which is has the it's sort of Buffy meets Doctor Who. It's about a school that's then touched by Doctor Who stuff. It's like there's not a TARDIS in it. I don't think there's a companion there. It's just a Coal Hill School, which it's been part of the universe since the 1960s, and it's going to be about the young cast. They deal with all the trials and tribulations of high school, also with a possible end of existence.
Well, what do you think about that? Because you watched Doctor Who.
I did. I sort of went off Doctor Who, but I liked what they were doing in Coal Hill, where Clara, his companion, and sort of her boyfriend were both working at the school. Mm-hmm. I have a big fondness for Buffy. I think high school is a really effective time to do that kind of stuff, because you know we all have high school is very large in life for everybody in that age. It's like this is everything is big, everything's dramatic. Mm-hmm. So that's a good place to set a sci-fi show where everything can seem bigger and larger than life, and you can have all these hormones and your life changing and all that kind of stuff at a time that's probably one of those great places to set a drama of any kind.
You read Morning Glories, right?
Yeah.
Something about it kind of reminds me of that. Like there's this
I can
school
see that.
Of weirdness, and all these kids that might have some might have powers. Right,
you know, the thing is, I like Morning Glories, but Morning Glories sort of wandered off the plot a little bit.
Yeah, I only read the first few, and I was like, this is kind of fun.
And I'm hoping that the Class will have a little more focus, which I would expect it will.
Okay,
It's being executive produced by Stephen Moffat, who has not been killing it on Doctor Who lately, but
maybe you need something new to sink his teeth.
But here's what's interesting. Someone from Happy Valley, the Netflix show, Catherine Kelly, has been cast as the teacher. Have you guys watched Happy Valley?
Happy Valley.
I started watching it.
Okay, I haven't watched it. My parents loved it, and I've seen a lot of friends who really liked it on Netflix.
It started off so dark in its first episode that I just went, I can't do it.
Okay,
with a kidnapping of a kid kind of thing, and I was just like,
But it said it was a Happy Valley grant.
Yeah, that's deceptive. Tricked me.
All right, Marvel has announced another show.
Mm-hmm.
Cloak and Dagger is heading to, what's the name of it? Freeform?
Freeform.
What was once ABC Family.
Oh.
I'm excited by the notion they're doing Cloak and Dagger. This is one of those characters I never thought would come to TV.
I'm not actually totally familiar with him. I mean, Cloak is a guy who can sweep anyone into his cloak and disappear them to anywhere.
Yeah.
And then Dagger, she throws
light daggers. Yeah.
Daggers.
So the interesting thing about Cloak and Dagger, especially being on Freeform, when they announced Cloak and Dagger, I thought it was a Netflix show.
Okay.
Because Cloak and Dagger are a pair of teenage runaways who get experimented on by drug lords. And the drugs give them powers, and then they go on. They fight like chicken hawks for who are doing child prostitution and drug dealers and all this kind of street level crime.
Wow.
I mean, I can absolutely see a gritty Netflix version of this be amazing. Right? But the direction that Freeform is going to go is going to focus on the two of them and their sort of romance and the sort of tragic romance of it. And the Cloak has always sort of been into Dagger, and Dagger's not as into Cloak, and he's sort of a tragic figure. And I can see an interesting version of that too. I assume they're going to play down the drug element of it, that they get experimented on and they get powers. And I assume they're going to play down the drug lords. It'll be more like evil scientists, that kind of stuff, which is kind of too bad. But I can, like I say, I can see an interesting version of this where if they go sort of the tonal of Flash and Supergirl and they keep it a little bit light, where it could be an interesting show.
I mean, I obviously have reservations with it just being on Freeform.
Understandable, understandable.
Just because the tone of all of their shows, it's just, it's so saccharine, cornball, that it always makes me groan.
Yeah.
And with seeing what they're being able to do on Netflix, where you're allowed a lot more creative freedom to really explore the darker sides, the more interesting sides, I don't even need it to just be dark. But I think that being on a network like
ABC,
it's restricted.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
So I'm a little bit disappointed by that.
I am also a little disappointed. I would rather it was a Netflix show, but
they're obviously rebranding Freeform.
Right. I can see an interesting version of this show. I mean, I like lighter fare. I like stuff on the CW. You know, I've watched some of like
it sounds like Jane the Virgin
and that kind of thing, and I can see a fun version of that. So I think it might be interesting. Okay, this is exciting news to me and probably you guys too.
Yeah,
HBO has announced their version of Talking Dead.
Yes.
It's going to be called After the Thrones. It's an official after show to Game of Thrones. And that's cool enough. That's a fun idea.
Right. They should have gone with Watch the Throne. Missed opportunity.
Yes.
Promotion.
Yes.
But now our watch has begun.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great.
That should be their sign off at the end of every episode. And now our watch has ended.
Yeah. Bill Simmons, you can keep that.
But this is Bill Simmons who's come over to HBO. And the people who are in his network, Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan, who do one of my favorite TV podcasts that is not the TV Dudes.
The Watch.
The Watch. And these guys are great. They're super funny. They've got great chemistry. They're very intelligent. They're going to do a great after show.
Seriously, their podcast is called The Watch. Watch the Throne.
Yeah, Watch the Throne.
Man, it could have been great. But also, that does seem really exciting. Let me ask, though, do you guys watch any of Chris Hardwick's after shows?
No, but I don't watch Walking Dead.
But you watch Better Call Saul. They do one there.
I've never.
Do they? I guess they do.
They do, but the thing is, like, I have to pay for Better Call Saul. I'm not going to pay an extra season pass for Chris Hardwick.
I'd rather listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
Chris Hardwick. He seems like I just don't get him.
I mean, I like Chris Hardwick.
He's very impressive.
I think he's funny, but.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Just
I've started watching After Midnight, and Hardwick is nerdy. He's self-effacing, very funny, very quick.
On that show, I think he's really good. Yeah. Obviously, because
he can be a little obsequious on, and I think that's kind of what they want on the official shows.
Yeah, that's.
And so I think that can turn people off.
Yeah, and that's why I'm like,
But I would watch them if I had unlimited time and unlimited space and money.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
all those factors.
If Talking Saul was a free thing that I could get with my Better Call Saul season pass, I'd probably watch it.
Yeah. I'm excited for this After the Thrones.
But this is going to be great.
Well, this is going to be great, and also and it makes sense because you wouldn't need it really before because you kind of had the books. Now you don't have the books.
Yeah.
It's really making it seem like there's opportunity for the TV Dudes to have an after show watch discussion section.
How about this? I got it. Get Real with Real Rob.
Yeah, right.
The post-Real Rob show. Yeah. We'll have Rob Schneider on and we'll just ask him questions.
I love that.
Like questions like, why? Why did you do this to us? Why?
Shame.
Shame.
Rub your nose
in
it. Put your nose in it. Smell it. Yeah. This is what you did.
That's right. We'll make him walk naked through the audience, shouting shame and ringing a bell.
How about we do the After Veep show or something? That'd be after we could do After Veep and after Silicon Valley.
You know what we should do is go back in time and do one for like a retro show, like after MASH.
Wait, I'm sorry.
No.
I know. Okay, I'm sorry I had to mention this, but at 11:22:63,
yeah.
That was the funniest line when he was in the second episode. Yes. He talked about, oh, so what you doing in MASH?
4077.
I died laughing.
Yep.
Sorry, that was great.
How about this? 11:22:63 and 1 minute. That'd be our follow-up.
Plus one.
Okay, we'll keep working on it. We'll find it. Okay, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia has been renewed for 2 more seasons.
Wow.
Good grief.
And that's not so only awesome. Is that great, because they're still great at this time.
Yes.
Yeah.
They just matched a historical TV record. They are now the longest-running live-action comedy since Ozzie and Harriet. Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Now, here's the funny thing. If they get renewed for another one, they'll surpass that record.
And who's going to top that?
Yeah.
Who's going to top? I mean, I can't think of another comedy series going, 16 seasons?
It's crazy that they're still going, but they're still great.
I'm old, and Ozzie and Harriet was before I was born. Okay? So that shows you how old that is.
The fortunate thing is, though, that they only do, 10, 11 episodes of season 8, maybe? They might.
No, it's like 10. It's like 10. Yeah. Mm.
So they do nice short seasons. They do not have as many episodes, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah.
But still pretty impressive, though.
Yeah, yeah. I'm psyched, because this last season ended. I just caught the last the Gang Goes to Hell.
Yeah.
And it was a great two-parter.
The breakdown. Man, I love their little stomp thing they did for in that episode.
We know that Preacher is approaching. Soon. I don't know exactly when, but
soon. We've had friends who've seen it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've heard mixed things.
Mixed things.
Some people really liked it. Some people really didn't.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And both are huge fans of the original. Hmm.
So another Garth Ennis book that's very similar to Preacher, in that it's sort of extreme and darkly humorous. The Boys has been set at Cinemax with the guys, with Seth Rogen and his producing partner. I've forgotten his name. But the guys who are doing Preacher.
Yeah, it's Jonah Hill.
Evan Goldberg.
Superbad.
So The Boys is a comic I hate, just putting that out there. It is a comic about basically special ops in a world where superheroes are all scumbags. They do drugs. They are sex perverts. They kill people. They're the worst. And these guys are all like freelance special ops who decide to go and kill all the superheroes.
Yeah.
It's so cynical, not up my alley at all. But a lot of people love this book, and
it's pretty gruesome.
It is going to be Eric Kripke from Supernatural is involved in writing it.
Wow.
And that draws some of my attention. And also the weird thing is, while I don't like it as a comic, I could see it working as a TV show, especially on Cinemax.
Yes.
Especially because one of the things you really wanted to do, one of the things we're going to miss in Preacher, is the sort of ultraviolence.
Yeah.
Mm. On Cinemax, they can do the crazy ultraviolence that Garth Ennis and artist Eric Robertson do so well, because we've seen Banshee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just say, Cinemax is the most, probably the most pulp out of all the
channels.
And it just sounds like a pulp action thing that needs all that.
Yeah.
Them and Stars.
This feels very fitting for Cinemax. So I am weirdly more interested in The Boys TV show than I am the Preacher TV show, because I like The Boys less, so I don't care what they do to it.
That's interesting. we'll see what happens with Preacher in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we will.
As soon as Better Call Saul's out.
Wow, that's so
finally, this may be the weirdest news I've saved for last.
This is so weird.
DreamWorks TV recently purchased Classic Media, small-time entertainment company primarily focused on re-releasing nostalgic cartoons and semi-obscure television series to DVD.
Right.
And that includes He-Man. So they're reimagining He-Man as a reality TV show. Oh, is that me?
Yeah, it was you. Yeah.
I thought that was you giving me a backbeat, Grant.
You made it super exciting. But I don't know if that picked up on the mic.
That was very cool, because it was the music was coming. I thought, man, you got the He-Man theme? That's great.
Yeah, they're doing He-Man as a reality TV show.
Is it a reality TV show? I misread that.
It's it's a little weird. So I'm about to try to get the music to stop going so I can look at this site. I don't know if this is animated. I actually just pulled this up, and I'm kind of boggled by what that means.
So is this kind of like Space Ghost in a way?
That's
where they take the property, and then he has
Here we go. It is titled the I just lost it. It's titled The Real Masters of the Universe, or The Real Master for Real Masters of Eternia.
Oh, it's like Real Housewives.
The Real Master of Eternia, 8 minute short, comprised of re-edited and redubbed animation footage, and turned into a reality TV spoof.
Wow.
So that's more like Sequest. Taking the footage and re-cutting it into a different kind of comedy.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So awesome. Apparently, I loved the cartoon as a kid.
Apparently, this is on a YouTube series as well. Parody of Big Brother style reality TV. He-Man, Skeletor, Teela, Man-at-Arms, Orko, Merman, and Beastman move into Castle Grayskull to live together and compete in challenges hosted by the Sorceress.
That's interesting.
Weird.
Yeah, so weird.
Okay. So keep your eyes peeled, everyone, for that one.
And before we leave news, I did want to give one quick shout out to our friends over at TVI.
That's right.
They are launching a new podcast. Especially, it's launched as you hear this. Mm-hmm. It's called Mr. Robot O. It's a show focused on the show Mr. Robot, the USA show Mr. Robot.
Is that O-H or O as in zero?
O-H. Mr. Robot, comma, O-H.
Ah.
And basically each episode will be host Mike Moody and some guests. One or two guests talking about that episode. Mm-hmm. I will be on the one that's doing episode 4, Daemons. We did that recording this week. I think it turned out pretty good. It's sort of a deep dive into one single episode of Mr. Robot. So if you like that, especially if you like that show, I think this is going to be a really fun podcast to listen to.
Cool. Yeah.
I got to listen to it. Is it going to time it for the release of season 2?
They're going to be doing season 2, but I believe that season 1 will all hit before season 2. The podcast will all hit before season 2 hits.
Cool.
Shows to discuss, but we're going to save all the finales for the middle section. We're going to start off with Archer, which just returned for its seventh season. And seventh season.
Yeah.
Is there a little bit of a tragic ending in this beginning of this episode? Yes, although wasn't it such an obvious red herring?
Yeah.
Like, so the episode opens up with Archer floating dead in a pool.
Now, who were the two voices on the detectives? I caught one of them. It was Key and Peele, wasn't it?
I believe it was
Key and Peele.
Oh man, because one has such a great deep voice.
It was so funny. Two of them just kind of talking.
The little banter.
Yeah, the little banter was really, really good.
That would make sense because we also have Patton Oswalt now.
Patton Oswalt is in here as a divorce lawyer with grenades.
So I was a little bit confused because it seemed like the episode was wanting to start off with this mystery of how does Archer die?
Yeah.
But within the exact same episode, they show a complete Archer doppelganger that has a mustache. Right.
Yeah.
Well. And I'm like, well, okay, it's that guy. They have him shave his mustache at some point, and that's just that guy, right?
The end. Yeah.
Well, like, why would they show it in the first episode then?
Because it's a goofy pre-credits tease. Yeah. That's all it is.
Okay.
They didn't want to do an arc. They didn't want to do a season-long arc where we wondered why Archer. Nobody thinks Archer's going to die.
No, but I thought they might dangle it a little longer.
I don't know about that.
It
just seems so lazy.
Oh, man.
Or just like, fuck it. We don't care.
So they keep reinventing it. They did the Archer Vice, which was not super successful.
I didn't like that.
Then they did CIA, which was okay. But them being privatized in L.A.
That makes sense.
It's oh man, this is gonna be fun. And having the fact that Cyril Figgis is the only one who can get a license,
yeah, that makes total sense. And, yeah. and he's gonna be in charge, yet they still don't respect him at all.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some funny commentary in here. I thought that they still kind of they love retreading on jokes,
yeah,
beating
they do.
A joke to death.
Yes,
right.
But there are some unexpected moments. Like I love when. Ray. When Ray picks up Lana and he just takes off,
books it out of there. Yeah,
and I'm like, what? And,
yeah, and, you forgot about cybernetic legs.
She's like, yeah, he's got cybernetic.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, the cybernetic legs. Yeah, yeah.
I love the stuff with Krieger and all of his
his weirdness,
his lance he had.
Yes,
you can use this, right? So a lot of that was just kind of taking me by surprise. Mm. Were you guys liking the mystery element of it outside of the Archer thing?
You mean about who hired them and all that kind of thing? I don't really care.
Yeah.
I'm fine. It's there as a setup.
Or but it's going to be like Barry at the end or something. You know? Or something.
Or Katya.
Somebody from their past, it'll be there.
Yeah.
So or Chris, what's his name? Christian Slater comes back.
But the thing is,
FBI guy, whatever.
I have a huge fondness for LA Noire.
Yeah.
And this is not that. This is, but I also have a fondness for like Magnum PI and this kind of goofy 80s, and it is that. And so fitting Archer and the cast into that milieu is just perfect.
Yeah.
Something about it, it still just feels a little bit silly and slapstick.
Is it just long and tooth for you?
Yeah, I feel like the charm of the show has mostly disappeared for me.
I don't love it as much as I used to, but I always enjoy it.
It's just because, I mean, there's so many times that. It's like so the consequences for their actions and decisions, even though it's comedy fodder, after a while, it's like, okay, I'm kind of – something's really got to happen because nothing really happens to the main character except Ray, who got paralyzed. Now he's got these bionic legs. But I don't know. I guess after – and then they had the kid. But I don't know. I have to be in the mood to watch it now.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I would just like a little bit more – it seems weird to say it, but – depth of character development.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I want there to be a change in evolution in how relationships work. I kind of actually do want those things.
Yeah.
Rather than just the buddy comedy thing.
Yeah, but at this point they've pretty much put their stakes in this is what it's going to be.
They've had a couple snippets of early episodes like really kind of dark low like slow moments that are cool, but
and the animation is so fun and it's so bright and vivid and clean. They really are able to capture the atmosphere of a lot of the places they go to. I'm always impressed with their animation.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm a little bit more on it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's move on to our first of several finales that we hit this week.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. 11/22/63 on Hulu.
Yes.
Now, a little disclosure before we get into this. Randy's seen the full season.
Yep.
I've read the book and I started it and you started it, Greg, right?
Yeah, I started. I'm on the third episode.
Yeah, I think we're about the same point.
Yeah, right.
So we're a little bit behind, but I at least know what does end up happening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think overall of this?
Overall, I liked this show, but did not love it. I'm not a giant Stephen King fan. Like there's very little of his stuff that I think is the best stuff ever. He tends to write. Stephen King has great premises.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then he has very good characters, but the way he goes to explore these premises are usually very odd to me. Like he spends a lot of time on James Franco's character being a teacher, like in the novel, even more so. I know.
Yeah.
No, I just know from reading reviews.
Yeah. Right.
Like there's just the whole thing is about, okay, well now he's a teacher in 1963.
Right. It almost seemed like in the book, the rest of the premise was just a gimmick for him to explore a man out of time being a teacher and romanticizing the idea of him being a theater director for high school.
Yeah, and I will say from what I've seen, basically just people talking about it, what they changed in the show, a lot of it was to keep things moving a little bit and get a little more tension and keep it a little more of a suspense show.
The first couple episodes I thought were fantastic in doing that
because
they actually add a lot more to the exploration of the murderous husband.
Yes. Yeah.
And how they kind of carry out that whole plot and having Tall Drink of Water, whatever that actor's name is.
Yeah.
Raylan Givens as this foil for him was fantastic. It was really intense.
He was I've never seen him act like that.
Yeah.
That really, he scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Is that Slaughter Room? It's called Slaughter Room. Oh, Kill Floor. Kill Floor.
Yeah. Kill Floor.
But at the same time, I mean, the story, especially the back half, is very focused on him and Sadie. Mm-hmm. Is this girl that he meets, and I'm like, it's not uninteresting, and I know where he was going with it, but at the same time, I was like, mm-hmm. I was interested in the notion of time trying to stop being changed, and right. what the knock on effects are if you stop JFK from being assassinated and all that kind of stuff, and that is pretty much afterthoughts right. to the story here.
The book, just like I'm guessing the show,
yeah.
slows down
yeah.
to a very uncomfortable pace
yeah.
for a bit. And it seems like almost a bait and switch.
Yeah.
Like you were led to believe this is going to be a fun sort of time traveling sci-fi
yeah.
action adventure yeah. thing. And then all of a sudden it's this romantic,
character piece.
Character yeah.
piece. That's
yeah.
what, well, that's what Stephen King does is character pieces. And so this is very much of a piece with what he does, but I thought with J.J. Abrams involved that it might get a little weirder, a little more mm-hmm. of the sci-fi stuff. And it is a little more, focused. It's got a little more of that tension all throughout, mm-hmm. but I was not super, I thought the ending was solid, but not super satisfying. Okay. They were trying to do a sort of tragic end and you know, mm-hmm. Sort of a twist.
Yeah. It goes weird, right?
Right. Yeah. But I didn't quite plug, and then they wanted to give it sort of a happy ending at the end. And I thought it was a weird, there was some weird tone shifts, okay. I think throughout it. I liked it. I'm glad I watched it, but I don't know it's going to make my list like best TV of the year or anything.
Right.
Franco's performance was pretty good.
He yeah, was he, really well, good. And actually, good. The guy who was also from Justified, the guy who played Deke, the principal in 1963.
Oh, I never got to that point.
He is. I've completely blanked on his name now. He was the head marshal in Justified.
Oh, Cersei. Nick Cersei?
Yeah, Nick Cersei. Okay. Nick Cersei's great here.
Yeah.
Nick Cersei plays Nick Cersei, as always, but right. he's great here, and I liked him, even though he was mostly involved with the smaller parts of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And I liked the girl they cast to play Sadie. The guy they cast to play Oswald was weird, because you think of Oswald as sort of this, you know, the guy who killed JFK.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's mostly just kind of a twisted loser.
Well, yeah. that's kind of what Oswald was. Really.
I know. I mean, it's just interesting to see it that way. Right. He's got sort of a speech impediment. Mm-hmm. He's not all there mentally. He's right. got a violent temper. He's a weird dude.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there's interesting stuff throughout this, and there's enough tension and enough weirdness to keep me pulled through, but it wasn't what I was hoping for. Yeah.
Well, that's actually kind of discouraged me from wanting to finish it. I mean, a lot of other shows on my plate.
It's a solid offering from Hulu. It's definitely,
and it's safe. It's only like 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's not great like I was hoping it was gonna be.
It's so funny that they were able to cut it down to 8 episodes and still it has slow parts.
Yeah
So let's move on from there to talk a little bit about American Crime Story, The People versus OJ.
Yes, this is my wheelhouse.
This I just plowed through in the past 2 days to catch up.
I believe I watched 5 or 6 episodes in the last couple days.
But we all finished this. Man,
this was great.
I you know, when you first heard about it, we're like, oh, come on, this can't possibly be
good. And you're like,
good.
It's Ryan Murphy
yeah.
and Cuba Gooding Jr., who's not got the best history picking project.
Yeah, no, and he made
is it going to be pulpy or
and,
what?
And he, yeah. and he just physically wasn't OJ at the time.
Yeah.
He's still not.
He's still not.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, it's so good because
it's so good.
The actor who played Christopher Darden, man.
Yeah.
It's like
the casting on this was spectacular. Everybody in it, with the exception, honestly, I'm going to say Cuba Gooding Jr. is the weak spot in this show.
Yeah. Him and Travolta.
You know, Travolta was playing a certain character that I think you're supposed to hate, and I think he did a good job making the character.
Which is like Robert Shapiro, who, if people, when you read about him, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but he
overplayed it.
He seems awkward.
Yeah.
Among all these other people, he seems kind of over the top about a lot of his performance.
I agree, but I actually thought his performance was pretty solid for what it was.
Yeah.
Whereas I thought mostly Cuba Gooding Jr. was not giving a lot.
No.
And he didn't have a lot to do. He was mostly, I mean, OJ's mostly a prop in this story.
The last episode is where I think Cuba Gooding Jr. kind of explored the after the
yeah, the aftermath OJ. Of the OJ thinking that he was going to come out.
Yeah, it was very weird.
You know what my issue was, and I don't know if this comes down to the writing or to Cuba Gooding's performance, right. is that he plays OJ as almost sort of this lost innocent. He's like this guy who doesn't really know what's happening to him, and he's kind of, you know, happy when he shouldn't be and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I don't believe that OJ was that innocent or hapless.
Just a cog in a greater machine.
They underplayed his menace, I think.
The way he viewed himself is, every once in a while you go flying off the handle with a wife. You get in an argument, but you don't beat her and have cops called. And then you don't get pissed at her and kill her with some dude just happened to be there.
Yeah.
That's a little bit extreme, OJ, but because of that persona of who he was, I mean, OJ Simpson was a big dude in my life because of this football. Like, my dad liked him and stuff, and he was fucking everywhere. And he was just kind of smiling.
I love Nordberg.
Okay. All that stuff, it was really just... So when that came out, I mean, that... I'm trying to think about any other news story that shocked me more. And it's, again, this is before the internet, and it's hard to understand.
Yeah.
It wasn't a Twitter, you know, it was literally just...
Yeah, but it was on every station.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was immediately accessible all the time.
I think outside of OJ, I think getting to know all the other characters, that, like, the guy who played Lance Ito... was really good.
He did a great job.
Sarah Paulson was amazing.
I was just amazed at all these details I didn't know about how they worked behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know about, like, the greater extent of the Furman tapes.
Oh, I knew about that.
Wow. I didn't know about Ito's relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
That's Kenneth Choid play Judge Lance Ito.
Now, he was also one of the Howling Commandos.
Yeah,
and Sterling Brown was Christopher Darden.
Yeah,
he was really good.
The cast here. Oh, well, and we also got to talk about Johnny Cochran. Courtney B. Vance killed it.
And Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson. Yeah.
Were just amazing.
In The Manna for Heaven, Nathan Lane going back to North Carolina was amazing.
Yeah, Bailey.
F. Lee Bailey, probably the guy who everybody hated, but it was. Who ended up getting disbarred.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really...
Him just, like, using racial slurs, like, over and over to try and push Furman. Yeah. And it was just like, hey, I got it. Like it really... They captured this element of the Dream Team as this really rowdy bunch of bros that were just trying to, like, one-up each other on, like, who could get the biggest score in the trial.
Because,
like, oh, you know what, bros? I'm going to totally say it. But I'm going to say it there.
But I think it's also like, because they had to do that because, listen, any logical person would look and just say, this is just, I mean, it's reasonable doubt. I forgot that it only took 4 hours. I forgot because I remember it was October 5th. And I remember because it was like an afternoon. I just remember that day because it was a Friday and I had an interesting conversation with some people at the radio station I was at. And so I remember that day and I remember seeing the Oprah stuff and seeing all the cameras on the people. And I just felt sick because my mother, like I've said before, my mother had watched the trial every day and said, he's going to get off. And told me exactly why.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe her. And then he got off. And then I was like, man, what is...
Well, that's because the age we were, we didn't quite get everything that was going on.
No.
But the older people who had seen everything that was going on, they knew.
You're right.
The conversation between Darden and Marcia Clark.
Yeah.
Where she... it seemed like she lacked a certain degree of perspective of the actual greater trial that did occur.
No, because
it wasn't just a guy
getting away with somebody.
People.
Yeah,
yeah. It went so far beyond that, and she still didn't seem to understand
it's because,
that. I thought that was a prime opportunity for them to discuss.
But I also think the other issue, which didn't really catch on. It's odd as up now is the whole spousal abuse thing.
Yeah.
That was her angle, which is a logical, righteous angle that she should have had.
Oh, but yeah, because she brought up, like, her own personal...
Yeah, she had a lot of experience with it. And now that's just kind of, you know, the whole, you know, I stand with her, like, with athletes, you know, trying not to, you know, trying to bring that to light. That was a big deal, but at that time, nobody was really thinking about it. I mean, it's terrible because, like I said, I've had two people I know that were killed by domestic violence, and it still wasn't like it just wasn't a thing the way like that Ray Rice video the last couple of years.
Yeah,
this trial was, I mean, it just hit on class, race, sexism, power, fame.
And the show captured everything. All of that. I think that's...
Yes.
They did a fantastic job.
The other thing I think is really impressive about this, for the most part, they don't portray anyone as a bad guy or a good guy. Like, they've got that opening with Johnny Cochran where he's pulled over when he's a district attorney.
They show he's a victim.
And he's a victim. And
you kind of root for him.
And you're like, I want Johnny to get his. And then... The whole Marsha episode where it was focused on her.
Yeah.
And that was brutal, man.
I feel that in a way they were pretty consistent in portraying her as a hero of sorts.
Yeah, but they also portrayed her somewhat shrill.
Yeah. When Darling goes to her.
Everyone calls her shrill.
No, yeah, but early on they were showing her as being kind of hard-headed.
She was.
Because
the whole, when she went up, like, it was Dodd who said, don't put this guy on. Yeah. And she was just, oh, no. Yeah. She could not see the race angle.
And he couldn't resist having the glove for him.
Right. Yeah.
He got pulled into it. But when he says, like, hey, you know, you just wanted a black face, you didn't want a black voice. I thought that was
brilliant. That was great. Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Well, I love the relationship between the two of them, which is, it's a bit of speculation.
Apparently, I thought they did hooked up.
There's rumors, but apparently the book never really goes into it more than
they decided to err on not showing. Right.
But it was, I love the way they did that relationship.
Yeah.
And then the jury focused episode.
That was great.
That was so good. I'm honestly terrified of being on a long jury. Like the thought of being pulled away from my job for weeks at a time and my family.
And you can't watch TV or be interactive with anything.
Well, you know, they don't pay you shit. And you're given a very important thing to do, and you have to do it. Like, the notion of being stuck in this for 8 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems hellish.
It seems like hell. And they really went at it. I mean, they showed what was going on. And then they did that montage to Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah.
When they were all excluding jurors. Yeah. That was fantastic.
That was great. And then the way they did the ending with the actor and the real
person. Picture? Yeah.
And man, it's like... And people forget, like, I always feel really bad for Ron Goldman's family.
Yeah.
It just...
Yeah.
I mean, Browns weren't even, in this for the most part.
Yeah. But because the Goldmans had to advocate for their son.
Yeah.
Because it was all about OJ and his wife. And you forget that there's, you know, people that...
I do like that they gave him a role. It still seems like just... By the fact of how much crazy stuff happens in this trial, that the victims are kind of glossed over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's
much spectacle.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was like these two people were murdered brutally. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's one of those weird moments in American history that's like, I'm very glad that I lived through.
I don't know. This is potentially one of those best new shows kind of thing. This is up there.
It's shock. I mean, I'll say it was the biggest surprise so far.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was really, really good. It was very impressive. I was very happy with it. And they stuck the landing.
And it's just one of those things. It's like, and you know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
You knew.
And yet they still managed to sort of surprise you and get you with moments. Yeah.
It was a great show.
Yep.
The only other issue I had was that it just felt like the ending kind of drew out a bit too long.
Also, I thought it was weird they just got that guy off. That seemed like a weird ending.
Ew, what'd you watch?
Yo, man, that really happened.
Oh, got him off. Yeah, okay.
Yo, oh, man, no, sorry, I was changing topics.
Okay, yo, man, that really happened. He really got him off.
They got him off.
That's why the police are still mad to this day. That's gross. A little teaser to the Atlanta show that they played, which was brilliant.
Which was a great take.
Yeah. Well, yes. You want to complain about something, Greg?
Oh, fuck.
Let's talk about the Walking Dead finale.
Oh, my God.
Now, again, I disagree with you a bit on this. I kind of enjoyed it.
But
I understand the complaints.
It's action for just action's sake. Okay, we already had the overrun of the zombies. Okay, we got rid of that. Now we got to run into some other rogue faction of violent people. So the first thing they're going to do is leave the safest place that they have for, I don't know why. And then Carol going through this, they got to load up in the car. Yeah, and then Carol going out for this weird, like, all of a sudden, like, at first I thought she kind of just, it was like a fake thing. I'm like, what is she doing? She's just going to fake these people out, but then she really had this break, which I don't quite understand where it happened. I mean, I don't understand why she has this emotional break now, and then now she's wandering the world, and then she just gets shot for no reason, like, in arm, in the leg, and then, you know, Morgan.
She needed to suffer. I mean, they like doing this with some characters. They did the same thing with, what's his name? Tyrese, was that his name?
Yeah.
For a bit. Where they had him all of a sudden, like, I have a no-kill policy. I just can't do it anymore. Like, this is just too bleak.
Yeah, but for her, it just was totally out of, I don't know. I thought
it did seem a little bit out of left field.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Morgan made sense. Even Maggie obviously makes sense. The woman's pregnant, you know? So, because she's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And that was cool. But, I mean, the Rick, the stupidity of, like, okay, we're going to drive, because Maggie's sick, so we're going to try to drive and get everybody out to go against this force of, you know, who are pissed at us because we actually killed their people, you know?
I mean, I thought they did a fair job of outlining Rick's, like, growing hubris that he thought they were untouchable. He's like, you know what? We're Billy Badass. We can do whatever we want. And everything always works out because we have the skills. And having to bring him to his knees, figuratively and literally, I thought made sense as far as, you know, what you want to do with the story.
And I don't understand.
It's a little heavy-handed in how they decided get to that point.
Right, and I don't understand what they did with...
this is not a show where I expect nuance anymore.
With Dr. Eugene. I don't understand, like, he's going to sacrifice himself by driving the van.
And yeah, he's going to drive it around. They're going to still think it's going around.
Right, but then they're going to go on this trip carrying Maggie, who is, like, you know, at death's door. These two guys are going to just carry her.
There's four of them.
But it was only two of them carrying him. Like, you got
it was all four. Oh, and then the son in the front.
Right, right.
So, five.
So they're going to do that and go where? Because
they're trying to walk to that hilltop place.
Yeah.
That also was fortified because they had a doctor there.
Right, but
I don't know.
You don't know. Just,
I mean, I got places? What they were trying to do, and I thought that they illustrated very well that every time they tried to go through another checkpoint, they were just, there's a larger and larger mounting force, and suddenly they were blocked in, and there was no escape. And I thought the menace of that was kind of well done for the episode. I found it very effective when the reveal of Negan actually comes out.
Right. With the bat.
It's scary. And Lucille, the bat.
I felt it. I went straight up like, this is straight up like, you know, Inglourious Basterds. That's all I thought about. Like, the guy with the bat, he's going to hit him in the head.
Except, him going, we're going to let one of you, all of you live except just one.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well.
Well, then which one? It's not going to be Rick.
I know who it is.
Oh, you do?
I'm pretty sure. Well, here's the thing. They don't show us, and they show just the perspective.
Right.
And a lot of people got upset. This is the biggest thing. Most people complaining about this episode really were pissed off because they build up to one of these people is going to die.
Right.
And then they leave it on this cliffhanger, not showing who actually gets killed because they show it from that person's perspective.
Right.
And I can understand.
What do you think is Daryl?
How about we do this? If you guys don't want to hear my thoughts on who it is, go ahead and jump ahead a minute.
Right.
I'm going to speculate on it just for a minute real quick, and then we can go back to discussing things. But go ahead and just jump ahead a minute.
Beep.
Otherwise, I think it was Glenn. I'm pretty sure it was Glenn. I feel like all the story beats were leading up to it being Glenn. I saw this clip where someone slowed down the audio.
Right.
And you can kind of hear Maggie going, Glenn.
Yeah, okay.
And some other people yelling to that effect.
Right.
I think Glenn also, I think it would just make the most sense that it's that person.
I guess. I don't.
Because, you know, they already teased about him dying earlier and then they didn't follow through and now they finally do.
Well, that's ridiculous. It makes it even worse.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Have you heard the theory that this is also a bit of a cudgel for negotiations? That when they're negotiating the actors, they can say, look, the actor's like, well, I want to raise him. Like, well, you could be the guy who got beat to death with the bat. How about that?
Damn, that's shady shit because they make a lot of money on this show.
Well, just saying, it's possible.
I thought that's why I said Daryl because I saw that he's got some other show that he's doing. He's doing like this realistic like biker show.
Dude, they don't want to lose Daryl.
But the thing is, if they did lose Daryl, they would possibly gain back some of the people who have left just on the basis of One of the things that bothered us is all these people are safe.
And if they
killed off someone who we all assume was safe,
right,
they might get people back on the show.
And it's not Game of Thrones where people come back as zombies. But it's dead.
Morgan.
They do come back as zombies.
Yeah. They come back as zombies, actual zombies.
That's funny.
So Morgan and Carol slip off to the whatever because they're not captured. So you already know one out. Okay, Morgan somehow is going to infiltrate or whatever to help get them out. So you already can figure that out.
No, I figure they're all going to be let back to their compound. Right. They're going to have to give away half of their stuff.
Right.
And they're going to start somehow, over or they're going to go to war.
But somehow Morgan will be part of it because they didn't capture him and maybe he nurses Carol back to health for using some mystical shit that we haven't seen before. I don't know.
Slap his hands together and warm him up really quickly.
Yeah, just blow on her gun wound.
Miyagi style.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's so many loose threads of this of the plot that just didn't make any sense. And then
I mean, it was two separate stories. That's an A plot and a B plot.
But they're gonna go get together because it seems like Rick, they're trapped. They're gonna kill somebody and then they're gonna have to be slaves. And who's gonna save them? How are they gonna save them? And it's, Morgan will come in. He'll come in with his stick, just jumping in like a Jedi. And just
they're all gonna be let go. Those people, like Rick's crew,
right.
There's only one consequence. They have to lose one of their people.
Right.
And it's probably going to be a main cast member. Right. I don't think they're going to get rid of
the Latino girl. I don't even know her name.
Rosita.
Rosita. I don't think
they're going to get rid of Hee-haw hair.
Eugene. Or redhead guy.
Abraham.
Abraham, yeah.
He could be.
I don't know.
Maybe it's Rick.
No, it's Rick. Actually, it would be interesting. I thought his son died in the book, so it should be his son.
No, his son's still alive in the books. I thought he died.
Oh, okay. I thought he died. Right.
He loses his eye. That was his big thing.
All right. I don't know. I don't care.
The thing I hated was the very beginning with his son, like, locking that girl in the
bedroom. That was ridiculous.
And, like, them trying to establish that they have this relationship thing that I just don't care about.
It was ridiculous. There's no development. It made no sense. She's going to be in that closet. She's still in that closet. So what?
Doesn't make sense that when something bad goes on everyone joins the party to like leave and not protect the main city that is their new treasure.
Right. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like how are you guys surviving this? And I get it. It's plot for the sake of what they want to achieve in these particular scenes. And this show, that's what it's always been.
But it
doesn't make logical sense.
It
Rick is our fearless leader, but he's not our intelligent leader.
Right.
He's kind of dumb.
Yeah. And it's to the point where I think I'm not going to watch anymore.
Really? I got to keep watching. I can't stop this show.
I've wasted enough time of watching like True Blood after it's gotten to this point. So I'm like, I don't want to do that again. Like, I mean, I'm not going to be
Come
sorry.
Come on, Greg. Hate watch.
Because they're smart because they put it on when there's nothing else to watch.
Yeah.
Seriously. Like, that's one of the genius programming things with this stupid show.
Not right now. Right now, there's a ton of stuff to watch.
Well, right now, but in the fall, there wasn't that. Well, I guess it was.
I don't know. When it started? Yeah.
Because on Sunday nights. Yeah.
I don't think they're too concerned about competition.
No.
People still watch the fuck
people
out
love
of
this show.
Yes, you do.
All right, let's go to our last show of the evening. The show we all love to talk about, Better Call Saul.
Yes.
And the episode called Fifi, which is episode 7? 8?
Yes, I believe that's right. I don't know off the top of my head.
Right.
Yeah. So, in this episode, what happens?
Okay, well, first of all, we got to talk about that opening shot.
Mm-hmm.
That long camera, one take shot.
That was so impressive.
So there is, I listen to their podcast as I do every week.
Yeah.
There is a cut in there. It's hidden in there.
Okay.
There is one cut in there.
So from the highway to the...
Maybe somewhere in there, there's a cut. So it's not all one, but it looks like one shot. And it's a really impressive opener. The music is good. And it basically shows that they search these trucks that are coming into New Mexico with drugs.
Like, what a set piece as well.
Yeah.
I was wondering, like, where the fuck did they film this?
Yeah.
And how did
Albuquerque, where there's plenty of space.
It's made up. It's digitally constructed. Some of it is digital. It is a created set. They want to do a real border crossing, but it's just impossible
to
do.
You can't do it. Yeah.
So this was created, but yeah, it's like a big warehouse, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's very impressive. And it's one of the few Better Call Saul teasers that Saul isn't in.
Right.
Like, there's not a main character in this one.
I don't get the popsicle stick thing. I didn't get it.
I think it was just a thing he does.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But on top of that, the ice cream truck with all that stuff is a reference to how drugs were brought in, I thought, by
Gus.
Gus, later on.
He uses the chicken trucks.
He uses chicken trucks.
Yeah, but aren't those also cold-packed trucks?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's kind of neat.
Yep.
And we are getting ever closer to Gus showing up. You got to, right?
Yep, that day is coming.
Because we have Mike tracking these people, and and when he was sawing or drilling into the hose, I knew exactly what he was making.
Yeah, me too.
And I was like, how do I know that he's going to make this to pop the tires? But
I knew that too, and it was just cute because he had the thing with his granddaughter.
He and his granddaughter are great. Yes. That's really good. Yeah. But yeah, the bulk of this, of course, is about Jimmy and Kim and Kim quitting and the fallout from that. And
Kim losing her main client, who she thought she had.
How much do you guys hate Chuck right now?
I hate Howard a little bit more.
Do you?
I mean, Howard was super scummy. Like, he just seemed so angry at her for a mistake that wasn't even that big of a mistake. It got blown so out of proportion, I thought. Like, she didn't relay that there was a commercial because she was under some impression that everyone else knew.
Yeah.
Right.
So why would she?
Oh, Howard was a dick to Kim in the previous episode. I mean, he kept her in the doghouse longer than he should have.
And then when
but he's paying the price for it because she's leaving.
Right.
She's leaving, and he was also kind of a bitter dick about it. I mean,
I thought he was sincere in his talk with Kim
but
about,
he was
like,
bitter. Oh, God, I'm sorry.
In his talk with Kim about sort of, you know, how he wished he could have done this when he was younger and gone out on his own, that kind of thing. I think that was 100% sincere. I don't think he was poking at her or anything.
Like, she walks out the door, he, like, makes it obvious that he's grabbing her client.
So they talked about this at Better Call Saul on the podcast, too. That's just what you do.
That's
just logical. I mean, regardless of the fact that he did it right when she was leaving, that's because he knows she's going to do the same thing.
Right.
So the logical thing to do is to call them and try to keep the business.
Right.
That's just logical. That's actually not a dick move necessarily.
No, it's something you would do. I mean, it's just like, it's competition.
I get that that's business, but I thought the fact that they would show he tones into his secretary while he knows she's right outside the door to say, get these people on the line.
But that's because he can't wait. That's because he can't waste time. I don't think that was like trying to rub it in her face.
No.
Oh, I figured that was the whole
point. That's why she was running.
That, like, you know, for however she might have perceived that situation, that's the bottom line, and there's still competitors.
That's why she was running back to her office.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, and bumping into people.
Well, and it's funny because this is the question that keeps getting raised is, is Kim right about the way she practices law, which is the right way to do it, the legal way, crossing all your T's and dotting your I's? Or is Jimmy right? Because Jimmy suggested to her, look, this is technically legal. It's ethical. It's just maybe a little gray, but put your resignation under his door and call them tonight.
Right.
And if she'd done that, she would have been on top of it. There would have been no run. Now, the thing is, ultimately, she still would have lost out because Chuck gets
comes
pissed.
In. Yeah.
When he finds out that Kim is going to business with Jimmy.
Right.
That's what that's all about.
And I mean, he gets so mad that he goes into the office, furgos all the electronic stuff.
Yeah.
He sits there and talks like a sane man.
Yeah.
And in a boring way, but it's just so convincing about his expertise.
Well,
he
knew exactly where to hit that guy.
Right.
He knew exactly how to get the business away from Kim.
I was so convinced that he was going to take a different approach.
Really?
Approach that would throw Jimmy under the bus. I thought that he was going to use the fact that she is working alongside a person that he could point to the dubious practices of his brother in order to screw her over.
Yeah.
And that would be a nail in the coffin of their relationship.
The funny thing is, if he did that, he doesn't know this, but we know this, that would have backfired on him because they could have called up Kim and she would have said, oh, no, I'm not practicing with him. We're just sharing a law office.
Right.
We're not co-counsel. You have nothing to do with Jimmy McGill.
Yeah.
And I think that would have blown up in his face. Whereas this, he makes a good point that, like, they're a big bank. They need a big firm.
Right.
And then Jimmy finds the perfect way to hit back at them.
Why this is written by these guys and not me. It was a much smarter call.
Yeah. But I love that they put us in the thing where Jimmy goes and does the thing that if Kim ever found out, she'd be furious with
him. The whole copy and the fact that he's such an expert. And then this is back in the day, boys and girls, where you actually use your X-Acto knife to actually cut up documents and stuff, to forge them instead of doing it all in Photoshop. It was brilliant. And again, what Gilligan... And
Gould.
Simon
Peter Golden Gilligan, but
yeah, what they do is all those little minutia details. Yeah, and they let things just happen.
Yeah,
like yeah, you have to see him cut. Yeah. And measure meticulously yeah. the letters and line them up with the exact.
These guys are the masters of montage.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another great montage.
Love drawing them out. Right. They don't just like do a montage for the effect of, of trying to speed up a scene.
Yeah.
They do a montage and they just stick with it just to really explore and take their time.
Now, do you guys think Jimmy was in the right here? Do you think, can you justify it?
No.
No.
Cause
I can. Because Chuck fucked over Kim for no reason other than that she is with Jimmy, and so Jimmy.
Well, that's what he thinks. When Howard goes in there and talks to Chuck and says, "We finally got this one," it's apparently something that he's been chasing for years.
Yeah,
it seems like it did have a bigger.
You don't think it was a personal thing?
I think it could have been both.
Yeah.
Well, he was mad. He was more mad about. I mean, when he actually sat up. How the hell did we lose? How did we lose that client?
Yeah.
So to me, it was more about the client than I think the Jimmy thing. He just knew helped them crystallize a way to a strategy to get him back.
Yeah,
I don't think it was personally like, now you got me involved because of Jimmy.
Oh, see, I read it as him not wanting Jimmy to have anything, which means that if Kim is with Jimmy, that he doesn't want Kim to have anything.
I felt that was why they. In particular, put that scene where Howard says, "We finally got it. We finally got the account that you've always wanted."
All right.
So Jimmy assumes it's only because of her.
Okay.
But I think from Chuck's perspective, this is something that's always been precious to him from his childhood because whatever this guy's related to was some big account that he's always wanted.
What's clever about what Jimmy does is that it's exactly the kind of mistake that a big firm makes that a small firm wouldn't.
Exactly.
So it makes it look like they made a mistake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clever. But, now, the other thing that happens after that scene is that Chuck gets up and thanks Jimmy for being with him and says, I hope you know if things were reversed that I'd do this for you.
No one believes
that. Do you believe that? I don't believe that for
not
a second.
Not at all.
I believe it only because they have this strange, fucked up relationship. But, I mean, even Jimmy going by, he didn't initially go by to try to – he went by because his
he
brother
– He went by looking
like,
on him. Yeah, sure.
Let me look at my brother.
But I believe that Jimmy cares about Chuck, but I don't believe that Chuck cares about Jimmy as much. He wants to lord it over him.
Well, on a personal relationship, it always seems like Chuck is embarrassed by
Jimmy.
Well,
I mean, if what Jimmy – what Chuck says about Jimmy as a youth – I'd be pissed too.
Yeah.
I mean, he fucked his dad.
You do have to look at that, though.
Not literally.
You got to look at in the backstory in season one, Chuck did bail Jimmy out of a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So you can see where Chuck has come through for Jimmy in the past.
But for what purpose?
Also
saving
to hold it
Chuck's
over him.
Face?
Yeah, sure. But I think that the way I read that is that I believe that Chuck is sincere.
Yes.
He thinks that he thinks he would do that, but I don't believe he actually would.
That's
I think Chuck ultimately is all about Chuck.
Right.
And so the question is, and this was another one they debated in the podcast, does Jimmy feel guilty that his brother has just kind of said, thank you for this, and he used that time to fuck over Chuck?
No, because I think Jimmy thinks
that he's
Chuck
full, of
full
of
shit.
Yeah.
I think it's just a mixture of both. I think he feels guilty, but doesn't feel – I think he feels guilty at the moment, but
– Yeah.
But his overall plan, no. And that you can see him when he's always like kind of giving an answer why he makes that decision.
Yeah.
It's always like, well, I know it's not supposed to be doing it, but I know it's not supposed to be done this way, but I did it this way anyway because I thought in the end I could still get the same effect of it if I did it the right way.
Yeah.
Plus, part of me thinks that it's not necessarily personal.
Yeah.
To Chuck. He thinks that as far as the game of business, if he can cheat a system and get ahead and especially not get caught, hey, that's just the way it goes.
Right.
So I don't feel like I think he thinks he's fucking over HHM.
Yeah.
Right.
He's not fucking over his brother Chuck.
Yeah, that's true.
He's getting back at them.
But that's where he's wrong.
Yeah, he is.
Convenience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is going to blow up in his face. But, we know that.
And I remember, obviously, in Breaking Bad with the cigarette.
Yeah.
So, which I was like, how the hell is somehow this is going to get revealed? How is Chuck going to figure out this is what happened?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like,
it's going to come out, and it's going to be bad for him and for Chuck and for Kim.
Yeah.
But going back early in the episode, we have Fifi.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this show, remember, was originally supposed to be more of a comedy. Mm-hmm. And every so often those roots show through. Whenever the film students show up,
yes,
you're always in for a good time. And the guy they had is Fudge. Mm-hmm. Was it Major Fudge?
Major Fudge.
Whatever his name was.
What Fudge? What a perfect name.
Oh, my right. God. It was so great. And I love how in awe the Air Force captain is of him. Right. And I also love how Jimmy thinks he got caught.
Yeah.
Like the Air Force captain is coming. He's got a bunch of the guys in green uniforms. And Jimmy's first thing is like, hey, this isn't a problem. Like he's ready to talk his way out of a thing that's not a situation yet.
Yeah.
I loved that.
No,
I thought that was
cool.
So telling of who he is as a character.
And also just how quick he can pivot too, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was all really fun. I assume that the whole thing with a B-52 and a fake veteran is to be setting up a commercial for his new firm.
Yeah.
That's what I think, too.
But I'm curious what we'll see out of that.
Do you think it will be trying to mine clients from Davis and Maine?
No. I think basically Jimmy he was doing elder law, and he discovered he liked it, so that's where he's going to focus.
That and also just small stuff.
Yeah.
I think Jimmy likes it. Jimmy likes pals.
Yeah.
You know, and if just thinking about his persona in Breaking Bad, he always wanted to be a pal and be kind of part of it, but didn't want to be part of it, you know, or part of the plan, and he liked the juice of being maybe the oil that makes the plan go, the engine of the plan, but he didn't really want to be involved. And I don't know, I you see that in him, and I just see this whole... I mean, just all that, the birth of who he becomes. You know, he's still kind of gone back to the nice suits, you know?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to stick to the loud suits, but he's still gone back.
He's not Saul yet.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how he translates to the law that he winds up doing, sort of like but criminal law, basically.
Exactly.
I'm wondering if that's going to tie into Mike and Gus and all that kind of stuff. Like, what leads him from elder law into the place he goes?
It has to, because, you know, Mike basically kind of works for him. Or works, you know, I think he basically pays Mac, and I think Mike even said that he basically works for him and Gus when confronted
Walter White.
By Walter. So I don't know. I can't wait to see that happen.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what Mike does. Well, I mean, we know what he's going to do with the garden holes.
Yeah.
But the little meticulous thing of them drilling it and then trying to get each piece right, it's like, this is great.
Yeah,
I just
want to see him take down that truck.
Yeah.
And steal the money, I assume?
Or so, who knows?
I imagine money is being shipped back to Mexico after the drugs are coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So which side is he going to hit it? Is he going to hit the drugs?
He'll hit the money. You know he'll hit the money.
That would be the more damaging aspect.
Or he might try to get both because he's greedy.
Well, awesome.
Yep.
We're going to call it a wrap here at this point because, man, we only have like two episodes left.
Two episodes.
Not enough. It's very sad.
Yep.
But we'll be back once again next week. We got a ton of other shows that we want to discuss. If we wanted to give a little bit of a preview for what we're going to be discussing next week, what else is there?
Billions is going to wrap. We're going to try and catch up on that.
We're going to talk about Billions, yes. And
Togetherness wraps next weekend? Or no, it's the week after.
Is it Togetherness?
It might be Togetherness.
Yes.
There's new show on TBS. I can't recall the name of it, but...
Is it the Jason Jones one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Point people to that one. The Path also just came up.
We'll probably catch that.
Speaking of Aaron Paul.
Yeah.
I just checked out a show on Netflix called The Detectorist, which features Gareth from the BBC Office.
Oh, okay.
And Toby Jones. It's pretty good, and I'm excited to talk about that as well.
Okay.
But a lot of new stuff coming up next week, so stay tuned. And until next week,
TV Dudes out. Last night, she said, oh, baby, I feel so down. Oh, it turned me off when I feel left out. So I turn around. Oh, baby, I don't care no more. I know this for sure. I'm walking out that door. Baby, I feel so down, and I don't
TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.